Good morning, all. It's a pleasure to be here today and to talk about sepsis. I also have a personal story about sepsis, which most people don't know. And it's because I also lost somebody as a result of sepsis as a junior doctor working in a hospital in Yorkshire. Had a friend who was 30 years old, pregnant, and developed sepsis in hospital, did not come in with sepsis. Developed sepsis in hospital, pregnant, and it wasn't recognized. And unfortunately, I had to go and resuscitate her, and she didn't make it. And the children also passed away. So as well as people coming in the hospital and not being recognized, you have people also developing sepsis in hospital and not being recognized. So sometimes people wonder about what drives me every day. It's personal story, and it's Delphine's story. It's a pleasure to be here today, and it's a pleasure also to have heard from Julie and also from Georgina. Julie is used to be a patient representative in our sepsis steering group at the Royal Liverpool Hospital, and so I've worked closely with her to improve sepsis in my hospital. And the stories which Julie and Georgina have just told us, I think, are very powerful. What I would like you to remember is first that sepsis is a significant cause of death, 44,000, a significant cause of mortality. Simple things make a difference. And so, as Georgina said, simple things make a difference. It's not rocket science, it's not thrombolysis, it's not major surgery. It's recognition, and it's sepsis 6 and antibiotics, most especially, within 1 hour. So it's not rocket science. The problem is the symptoms are not very specific. It's not like a stroke or a heart attack where the symptoms are more specific. They're vague. And the symptoms are not specific, but the signs are also not specific. So what needs to happen is really thinking about sepsis, screening for sepsis when doctors, nurses have got a sick patient or a patient with infection, and then doing the right thing very quickly. Screen for sepsis and do the right thing. So my day job is looking after patients with infection as an infectious disease consultant physician. But I also play a lead role as a clinical lead for sepsis at the Royal Liverpool Hospital. And that has drifted into a regional role for advancing quality sepsis and also the Cheshire Merseyside STP sepsis program. And then now nationally as well with NHS England and NHS Improvement. And also, I work as a chair of the African Sepsis Alliance as well. So you probably realise that sepsis has taken over my life, or my life, and my wife has issues with that, I'm sure. But it's for the right cause. It's to save lives, and it's to make a difference. So what I want to talk to you about is electronic sepsis at the Royal Liverpool Hospital, and what we've managed to do to improve care for patients with sepsis with electronic sepsis. So some of you would like Formula One. This is a patient safety meeting, and there is no better analogy than using Formula One. High risk, but they all focus on patient safety. And so I want you to I've just put three quotes there as background for you to think about, to reflect on. Patients want us to make them better, not harm them, be nice to them, and continue to improve. That's what patients really want from us as healthcare workers. In Formula One, they have similar objectives of what they want to achieve, but this is what patients want from us. Quality and patient safety is about culture, systems, and trained staff working together in teams. That's exactly what Formula One do. It's about the culture, they have systems, and they have trained teams working together. Trained individuals working together as teams to save lives. That's what we need to do in the healthcare sector. And every system is designed to deliver what it delivers. So when you've got a hospital that's not picking up and treating patients with sepsis, it is not designed to do that. And we need to redesign our systems and redesign our hospitals in order to be able to do that. It doesn't happen by chance. It doesn't happen because you educate everybody. It happens because you educate people and you change your systems. And unfortunately, it also needs some investment. So in the Royal Liverpool, 4 or 5 years ago, we were in a very different place. We had incidents, we had complaints, we had similar stories like Judy's story in our hospital. And we met with a medical director and said, we can't continue just sending emails out saying you must give antibiotics, you must recognize sepsis, do grand rounds. Something needs to change. We need to redesign our systems to be able to do the right thing for patients. And that's what we set out to do. And we have improved. And up to the beginning of end of last year, we had improved significantly. An example is in 2012, we had an audit that showed that we delivered antibiotics and the sepsis 6 for patients with sepsis within 6 hours for 17% of patients with sepsis, 1/7. That was, at that point, higher than national average, which was 14%. Now, we're in a position where, at the end of last year, we were around 50%, 50 to 60% of patients with sepsis getting the antibiotics within 1 hour. Not great, but it was much better than we were a few years ago. And we had done a lot through education, training. We looked at our human factors, looked at our systems, improved them. But we thought we needed to do something very different. And what we thought was we need to do what's called electronic sepsis. And I'll talk to you about what we did. But the reason was we wanted to reduce variation. Despite all the work we had done, care was still dependent on who you saw at what time of the day. So there was variation, which ward, who you saw, and what time of the day you came into hospital. We also had focused a lot on the emergency department, so we wanted to move the focus from emergency department to the wards, because patients who develop sepsis on the ward do worse, the outcomes are worse than those that come in with sepsis, partly because they're already frail and in hospital, but partly because the ward is not set up to react to people who are sick, although you would think so because it's a hospital. Its emergency department is set up like that. The ward is not set up like that. So people who develop illnesses on the wards tend to do badly, just like strokes. If you want to have a stroke at home, not in hospital. You'll respond better when you're in the emergency department, not when you're in the hospital. But there you go. So we decided that we needed to do something different, and what we thought that we'd do e-sepsis. So electronic sepsis is what we designed. And what we did was we have information in our systems. We have observations. We do electronic recording of vital signs. They're recorded electronically, and then the National Early Warning Score, a new score, which is a track and trigger system used to identify deteriorating patients in hospital and respond, is used in our hospital. So we had electronic news already, electronic observations, and electronic National Early Warning Score already working in our hospital. So that information is already available. So we thought, why not use that with blood results that we already have in the system from our results server, kidney function tests, white cell count, lactate level, to design an algorithm that will prompt staff to think about sepsis if they have not already thought about it. So it's really using our systems to automatically screen the patient for sepsis, And then we built an algorithm based on evidence and based on guidelines, NICE guidelines, also based on NHS England sepsis guidance published in September 2017, which I was part of developing the guidance. So we built an algorithm on the back of observations, electronic news, and then our results server to prompt staff to screen for sepsis and then go on and do the right thing. So we worked with our IT team, and it wasn't IT going away to do something for us and coming back with it. It was meeting weekly, clinicians, sepsis nurses, myself, and IT team with the project manager, meeting weekly, designing the tool, refining it over 3 months from December to end of March 2017, December 2016 to March 2017. And we tested it, and then we rolled it out across the whole hospital, around the whole hospital, and trained staff floor by floor, going through the hospital top floor to the bottom floor, training all nurses and care assistants and doctors on sepsis, but also how to use electronic sepsis. It's pretty simple and self-explanatory, but we use this as an opportunity to also train and teach staff about sepsis. And then we engaged with staff and rolled it out over three months from April. It was interesting. It wasn't about just about technology, because engaging staff meant we picked up a lot of cultural and system issues which we hadn't brought to the forefront and we had to deal with when, because that came more obvious, and I'll talk to you about some of those cultural issues. So how does it work? Electronic observations in our hospital are put on via nurses, care assistants would use a sort of an iPad or a mobile device, tablet device, and they'll put in the observations. They'll go to the ADT dashboard, and it has a ward view with patients who are in the ward area, and the care assistant would then sort of click and then bring up the details of the patient on the ward, from the ward, they select the patient, they would then click observations and then put in the observation. And it's pretty self-explanatory, like an app. They'll put in the observations for the patients, and this is what they'll do. They'll bring up the respiratory rate, how fast they're breathing, they'll put it in, and they'll go through all the different vital signs, and they'll put in all the different observations. And then it automatically calculates a national early warning score, a new score, and at that point, depending on whether it's a nurse or a care assistant, the algorithm already prompts the staff. If the information already have suggests that this patient may have infection, it will ask the person, does this person have an infection? And if it's a care assistant, that's logged in, they would need to find a nurse, a trained nurse, to go and answer the question. And so the nurse needs to say, have they got infection or not? Because you can't really make a diagnosis of sepsis without suspecting infection. You need to suspect infection first. So it needs a human being to say, is this infection? And so they need to go and find somebody who's competent, which is a staff nurse. So the nurse needs to answer that question. And if it's just information we have in the system suggesting it may be infection, then the question is this infection? And the nurse will need to answer that question to get through to the next step. The next step is high risk. Are there any criteria we have from the information we have so far which suggests this patient is at risk of ending up in intensive care or significantly at risk of ending up in intensive care or dying as a result of their illness? And that is from the observations that has just been done with a high early warning score, or it's because they have one significantly abnormal parameter from their vital signs, which is a red flag. Or it's because they have blood results that shows that they already have kidney failure, because it's in our system. The renal function is in our system. It suggests they've got kidney failure. That's already a problem. They're significantly more likely to suffer as a consequence of the illness compared to somebody else. Or their lactate level is high, because we already know it is in our system. Now, if we have that, it automatically ticks those boxes. And you won't get through without answering the question, is this sepsis or not? And if it isn't, tell me where what it is. The nurse has to answer the question. So it forces the nurse to answer the question if there's any high-risk criteria already known in our system. You won't get past it without saying why this is not sepsis. And if it's not sepsis, tell us what it is, because they're still ill. They still need to be sorted. Now, you'd see from the high-risk criteria that we have, does the patient look sick, right at the top, even more important than anything else, because there's no really tool that is brilliant in identifying patients with sepsis. There are good tools, but there's no brilliant tool, and we don't have a test that tells you this is sepsis 100%. So a lot of it is based on clinical judgment and clinical experience, and you can have somebody with normal observations but really sick, and the nurse realizes or the doctor realizes they're really sick, they still need to get on with it and treat the patient as sepsis. And so that's why we have right at the top, does the patient look sick? If they do, you need to crack on and treat this patient as sepsis. The sepsis 6 bundle then comes up after that, and they then go through and fill in the sepsis 6 bundle as they treat the patient. And it's pretty just a tick, but pretty simple, tick it, and you can adjust the time if you like, or if you're using the same time, you just tick it, it records the time automatically when things are done in the bundle. And then the bundle appears in our electronic patient record. So a doctor, nurse going around, sees that patient has been treated and which aspects of the bundle are complete and which aspects are not complete. And on the dashboard, there's also an alert there when there's an incomplete pathway. So a ward manager, at a click of a button, can know which patients are on the sepsis pathway and what has been done about them. And if nothing has been done or parts have been done, to go and find out what's happening with the patient. So I guess your real question is what has been the impact? So what has happened? We've done this, and so what? There's a national commissioning for quality and innovation target for sepsis, which hospitals have to deliver on. If they don't, they lose 0.25% of their income. For us, it's a significant amount of money. It's around £600,000. And it involves screening for sepsis and also administering antibiotics within 1 hour of diagnosis for patients with sepsis. So this is our data from the sequin. And before April, you could see that we had a system that varied randomly. It was purely chance, up and down. Since April, which is the bottom end, it's stabilized because we now have a system which screens automatically. It's not dependent on a human being thinking about sepsis now. It's depending on our system. So you come into hospital, the system screens you for sepsis when you put in the observations using the information we already have. So as you see now, our screening is 100% and it stayed there because the system does it and forces staff to do it. It's not depending on training everybody and making sure they have the right environmental human factors to help to think about sepsis. So screening for us is basically sorted by the system forcing people to screen for sepsis. What about antibiotics within 1 hour? Key measure for improvement. Again, before April, you see it was random, variation with the sequin, antibiotics within 1 hour. And this is all on a run chart, on an SPC chart. And since April, steady improvement. And we're now around 70%. We want to get to above 80% antibiotics administered within 1 hour of their observations being done. So that is 1 hour from observation being done. What has been the impact on mortality so far? We track our mortality for sepsis. This is in-hospital mortality for sepsis from 2016-17 and then now since April. And what we've seen since April, and bearing in mind that we haven't gone through winter, because winter is a true test, I think, of sepsis improvement with flu and pneumonia during the winter. But sepsis mortality has reduced by 1.5%, severe sepsis mortality 14% reduction, septic shock mortality 11% reduction. And we're continuing to track our mortality improvements in mortality. For us, estimated number of lives saved for us is around 50 lives saved as a result of the system, estimated with the numbers of sepsis, around 50 lives saved as a result of the system. So quite significant, and we're hoping that we'll get through winter and maintain this reduction in mortality. Now, before, I really didn't know what was going on our wards. I didn't have any data, really. But now I do. And now I'm meeting with ward managers and showing them their data for the wards, and they're finding it interesting. So this is an example of one of the wards showing that 50% of patients receive antibiotics within 1 hour. And we're now having discussions about what they can do about it and what needs to be done. And that's unraveled some of the cultural issues. We've had quite interesting discussions about whether it's the role of a nurse to say whether the patient has infection or not. And those are the cultural issues we're having to address. Is it a nurse's responsibility to take blood tests, put a Venflon, and what their shifts when we don't have anybody who can take a vent to put in a needle for Venflon, take blood cultures, and you have to wait for hours for a doctor to come and see the patient. All those are system issues which were there, but not obvious. And now they're at the forefront and we're having to deal with it. We're having to address them within our hospital. And we've had multiple meetings and now have an action plan with all stakeholders about how we're going to work together to make sure that when patients have sepsis on the ward, the system is also designed to respond and take out all those delays in response. So I want to finish with an example of how e-sepsis has rescued patients, and I think that's the right phrase, rescue. So this patient was a GP referral to cardiology. So cardiologists also have a rapid access area where GPs see somebody with chest pain can send the patient straight in rather than going to the emergency department for assessment about whether they may have a heart attack. So GP referral straight to the heart emergency care unit, and the query was chest pain. The 50-year-old lady sent into the heart emergency care unit, query chest pain, is it heart attack? She was seen by the consultant, and the feeling was the pain wasn't chest pain, it was more upper abdominal pain. So the feeling was that it was abdominal pain, not chest pain, and that it was constipation. So this lady was kept under observation. They did some blood tests to exclude a heart attack, did a heart tracing, and then kept the lady in because they felt it was constipation and she was in pain. A few hours after admission, she developed a temperature. So the nurse did a set of observations using e-sepsis and recorded the observations with the temperature. And because we already had blood results back, we had the observations, it's a high national early warning score, blood results suggesting it was infection. The question to the nurse was, do you suspect infection? The nurse answered yes. So the sepsis pathway came up and they had to complete the pathway. So they went on and took the blood tests that were required, took blood cultures to see whether there was evidence of blood poisoning, and called a doctor to come and see the patient. The doctor came and saw the patient and felt this lady was now more unwell and felt the source of infection was a chest infection, and so prescribed antibiotics. And within 1 hour, that had happened. But the treatment was for a chest infection. The following day, we had results from microbiology that she had blood poisoning. This lady had blood poisoning, and it was not a bacteria that causes a chest infection. It normally causes abdominal infection in your abdomen or a water infection. So she, because of the positive blood cultures suggesting that she had a bacteremia, we looked at infections below the diaphragm, and it turned out that she had cholecystitis. So she had an infected gallbladder, and that was the cause of her pain, chest pain, which became epigastric pain or abdominal pain. And within 3 days of being in hospital, she was identified she was on the right antibiotics. She got better with antibiotics. 3 days she was on tablet antibiotics and discharged home for surgeons to see her and remove the gallbladder. Now, this is a patient in a cardiology area referred with chest pain. I can tell you what would have happened in the past would have been if we'd have stayed in that ward with suspected heart attack, constipation, and maybe had a temperature, and they would still maybe thought she was relatively well, continued constipation. And she may have done badly and ended up in intensive care or not survived this illness. But within 3 days, we had a diagnosis, we discharged her with a clear plan, and the consequences are not the same. So it's a good example of how systems save lives, and if a system like this can rescue patients in hospital, and it doesn't happen by chance, it happens because we design our systems to do the right thing for patients. So for us, the learning has been non-clinicians, IT can actually save lives, and I tell them that they are IT clinicians. The IT folk can save lives, and they're part of the team. And they're part of patient safety and improvement. And working together as a team closely, not as parallel lines, but as an integrated team, means we can make a difference, and non-clinicians and clinicians. We set off with this improvement journey as technical change. We thought we were just designing something technical to improve sepsis. It became very far quickly adaptive change, not technical change, because we unraveled a lot of cultural and system issues which we also had to address, and we are still addressing. But I can really conclude that I now feel we have a safer system, we've reduced variation within the hospital, and also so far data suggests we've reduced mortality, and we've also managed to free up time from our sepsis nurses to now focus on quality improvement and delivering care, because they were also collecting a lot of the data for the sequin and on some of our regional collaborative project for sepsis. But now they can now spend their time providing care or leading improvements rather than collecting data for the sequin. So I'll stop there. That's my email if you have any queries. And I want to acknowledge members of the sepsis team and the IT team that have worked very hard to produce e-sepsis, which we developed and delivered within 3 months in our hospital. Thank you very much.